141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Please gamble responsibly.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. What a week of football we have in store. Celtic are off to Munich to take on Bayern in the Champions League, and just 3 days later we'll attempt to get past Hibs and into the League Cup final. Pedro Caixinha says Friday's performance was the best since he's been at Rangers, so can they build on that when they head to Hampden for a semi-final of their own against in-form Motherwell? It's all going wrong for Partick Thistle, and Stevie Clark's been speaking as the first time as Kilmarnock manager. Plenty to get our teeth into on a Monday evening, and in the second hour of tonight's show we'll be joined by Archie McPherson, who's just been inducted in the Scottish Football Hall of Fame. I'm joined by a couple of other
He never did say that, you know.
Is that right?
Well, we'll never did say
I'm sure we'll
that.
Get to that.
I've heard them say it.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
We'll ask maybe them. We'll ask the man himself after seven. But Hugh Keevans and Derek Johnson join me, Gordon Duncan, as always on a Monday. And Hugh Keevans, I don't say it as some sort of false advertising slogan at the start of the show. I say it because I mean it. Huge week of football ahead.
Brendan Rodgers arguably has the hardest time he's known since he became Celtic manager. You know, Bayern Munich for me is all about damage limitation in the Allianz Arena on Wednesday night. Then it's Hibs at Hampden on Saturday, and Brendan has already made it known that he doesn't think it's very fair that Celtic have a 12:15 kickoff 60 hours after they finished their match with Bayern Munich. When the other two semi-finalists have the luxury of a Sunday setting, which I think Brendan Rodgers feels should have been Celtic's. But such a hard week for him. For Rangers, I understand they have as many as 40,000 supporters at Hampden for the semi-final with Motherwell. For Stephen Robinson, up to fourth place in the league. How much is he looking forward to Sunday? An awful lot, I would say. There's so much good stuff going on, and for poor old Hamilton Accies and Partick Thistle, it's the other side of the coin. The dark clouds are looming.
Well, it's a massive game for Thistle as well. You're right, Hubie, all the bigger games, we all look forward to that, but Partick Thistle, they're at home again to Dundee. Yep. What is another, yet another 6-pointer there. Massive game for Thistle as well.
0141 951 1025 to join us on the phone lines. We are of course on Twitter at Clyde SSB. The best collective performance since we arrived. That is the opinion of Pedro Caixinha. That's his take on Rangers 3-0 win at St Johnstone on Friday. Carlos Peña scored a double. It's now of course all about the League Cup semi-final against Motherwell, and as far as the Ibrox boss is concerned, the bar has been set.
We want the team to perform all the time like this, collectively, knowing how to be very balanced on the ending moment. I mean, today we took two transitions, but because we lost the ball, not because we were not balanced on the ending position, attacking ending position, giving spaces or giving more freedom for them to place counter-attacks. So I'm very pleased about it, because it was something that we have been working along this week, and the boys really, really understood it and performed it very, very good. So the defensive basics that we work along these 2 weeks were very, very clear. Talking about the relations between the back four, and talking about the relations between the back four, the midfielders, the wingers and the fullbacks. I mean, defending as a team, the team really, really showed that, and I'm very, very pleased.
You sense that it's obviously back-to-back wins on a Friday night for your team. You sense that going to Hampden, you're going to be able to embrace the occasion, enjoy the occasion.
No, of course. Of course. Now the moment is for the boys to recover, to enjoy. They are going to have 3 days off, so as me. I'm going to close the store and I'm not going to think about football. Tuesday and Wednesday are already prepared, because we already have the information from Motherwell, so we know what we need to train to our team and to prepare that game. So it's arrive on Tuesday and start thinking about it, but of course with a desire. By one side to win the game, to be present in one final that is going to take place in November. And of course, respecting the opponent, because it's going to be definitely a tough opponent.
So Pedro Caixinha says that was the best collective performance since he arrived at Rangers. Rangers fans, do you agree? 0141 951 1025. And is Carlos Peña beginning to win over his doubters, or has he still got a bit of improvement to do? Again, 0141 951 1025. Derek Johnson.
You know, they could still play better, Rangers. I mean, I would agree with them. I thought the effort was better. I thought you got a lot more people running about and closing down. But St Johnstone, again, when you look at it, you know, there are a few chances. What about at Nothing Each when the ball was put through in between, you know, the two centre-backs and the shot? Fodering was at a great save. You know, most of it was good, but they still allowed, you know, St Johnstone to get in there and have a couple of shots. I would agree, probably as a unit, they'd probably... more players on the night that played better than they have been doing, that's for sure. And when you go away and you can beat St Johnstone 3-0, then you've got to be satisfied with that. But I would like to think there's better than that to come from Rangers.
Hugh, it's not all about looking back to Friday night. This is Monday. We've spoken a lot over the weekend about the performance, but everything now is analysed in the context of this League Cup semi-final. Yeah. How well are Rangers set up for this League Cup semi-final, given what we saw on Friday night?
I think they're set up very well. We've got a solid goalkeeper in Fotheringham. Alves brings all his experience to bear in central defence. Tavernier, his distribution of the ball, his final pass is an advantage for Rangers. Peña, for as long as he keeps on scoring goals, the doubters will disappear. Morelos is putting in a power of work, even though he doesn't always score. The next Rangers player to be capped by Scotland will be Graham Dorans. He has started to pick up form, and at a time of transition for Scotland, he could be the right man at the right time. But I think Rangers have been dismissed by all but the Rangers support because of what happened in Luxembourg, and that was a humiliating result and the worst in Rangers history. However, you can't dismiss them, Gordon. They are playing well and they have good players.
Mark and Giffnock, do you feel it's starting to come together?
Hi panel, good evening.
Hello.
Hi Mark.
Hiya. I think that Hugh and Derek, their comments since the season started has been spot on in terms of regarding Rangers, the players and how things have looked. However, a lot of the calls, certainly since the Old Firm game, there's been an awful lot of, from the media as well, not you guys, but there's a number of people in the media that don't like Coutinho. That's very obvious. And there's a lot of fans that don't like Coutinho. But I think now we're starting to see Pedro's team come together. I think the players, clearly some of them like Pena and the likes of Morelos, even though he scored 8 goals, have taken time to settle. Some of them can't even speak English. In fact, neither of them can. I think Jack and Dorans are a huge class up on Halliday and the likes from last year. The defence as well, Alves is class up. And I think what we're now seeing and what we will see, I think, you know, is a much stronger team. I think that people have been too harsh on, and some of my own supporters, on Pedro. I heard a comment last week, is there much difference between this team and last season? The difference is enormous, absolutely enormous, night and day, on and off the pitch at Rangers now compared to last year. Last year we couldn't buy a strip. We didn't have a director of football. Apparently, there was no money in the bank. Rangers have gone out and spent 8 to 10 million. We can go out and buy a third strip. I could take some family to get a strip last week. I've not been able to do that in 5 years. We've got a director of football who many of us have spoken to outside a lot of the away games. He's very, very friendly. He's got huge ideas for the club, for young players. We've got a team there now that is night and day to last season, and that will develop. I don't for a second believe we can challenge Celtic for the league this year. I think we've got to aim for second. We've got to aim for a cup. If we can get two, great. If we can get one, brilliant. But I think we need to be realistic. I think the fans really need to support the manager. There's a lot of people in the media that don't like Pedro. Maybe he comes across as arrogant or rude. Or I don't think a lot of the managers like him. I don't care. I think he's doing a good job at Ibrox. What do you think, Derek?
I was just going to say before Derek gets in that the media don't dislike Pedro Coutinho, Mark. He has a good habit for the media of throwing up headlines, and you know he won't stop being the way he is. The press don't dislike him. They highlight some of the things that he says, and they may take issue with some of the things that he says, but they don't dislike him. And I think to go back to your other point about the team itself, you're right in everything you say. What Rangers are looking for now is the psychological crossover between the years of misery that they've had to endure and that point where just getting to a final would be a big thing for Rangers if it happened on Sunday against Motherwell. To win a final, I think, would be that crossover moment that takes you from, as the proclaimers would say, from misery to happiness.
Mark, I can't disagree with anything you said. I thought you were a very, very sensible supporter. I thought you were fair as well. I think Pedro does have a lot of Rangers fans. They're not happy with him. What he needs to do, and it's something that I've been saying now, you know, for the last month, 5 weeks, what they need is consistency. You know, they've won two games. They won two before and then drew or lost the third one. You know, they've got to keep going and winning games. Aberdeen are there, have gone to Hibs on Saturday. They were next to Celtic. They were the most consistent team last season. And that's why, because they can go to these places and get results. Rangers are going to have to do the same. 3-0 away at St Johnstone is a fantastic result, the way St Johnstone are. You know, they're always in the top six. But Rangers are going to do it week in, week out. I thought, as I said earlier, I thought the effort they put in was a lot better. There's no doubt he's been working on the defensive side of it, and he has to do that because there are times where they're losing silly goals and they're having to score 3 goals to win games. You can't do that. So he's now looked at that. They look a bit more solid. And I think for him, coming up, the 2 games against Aberdeen, you know, within 5 days, and obviously the semi-final on Sunday, if he can win all these 3 games, then I'm sure the Rangers fans would certainly back him all the way. So it's a big, big month, I think, for Pedro.
John's in Paisley. Would you also go along with that, John?
Oh, I mean, I agree with back him 100%. No chance of that. No, at the moment. No, he's got a long, long way. A couple of, a month doesn't make it special, by the way.
The jury's still out for you then, John, is it?
So if he goes out and beats Aberdeen twice and gets to a final, that's not good enough for you, John?
Oh, no, he said that at the moment.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
Thank you very much here, Gordon. Don't you? I'll find my own corner with Derek. No, I mean Derek,
on you go. I'll just stand back and watch.
But St Johnstone only had 2 shots at goal. It's 16 corners and that's it. So, no, I mean, we've done our job. That's good enough.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Listen, I'm not complaining about that, John. No, 3-0 is a fantastic result.
See who's a bomb scare that's waiting to happen. Right, and that's the truth. It's a goalie.
I'm amazed, John. You know, and listen, you've got your opinion. You're quite right. You watched them, so you've got you're entitled to your opinion as well. I think now and again, like all goalkeepers, he makes a boo-boo. Everybody does that. But I think, John, on the whole, I think he's a good goalkeeper. I like him. I like him. I like him.
He does not command his box at all. He tries to play for a bit at the wrong times, and he'll cost us mere goals. He saves a lot. By the way. A great shortstopper, but commanding his 6-yard box. That's why St Johnstone tried to pile it on. If you think about it, in nearly every corner, we're struggling. That's why they go at 16 corners, because there's one after the other, because he wasn't controlling his 6-yard box.
Well, if you get 16 corners against you and you concede nothing off them, whose fault's that?
Well, they just continue. He wasn't controlling his box. It was defenders, to be honest with you.
Well, nevertheless, St Johnstone have had 16 corners and didn't score a goal. Nothing came off the 16 corners. So, Tommy Wright's got more concern about the 16 corners than Rangers have.
John, do you argue, John, that he's not good with the ball at his feet, or is it?
He's terrible with his ball at his feet, and he panics. He messes about too much with the ball as well. He holds on to it and makes. And he's very indecisive.
Is that not what he's been encouraged to do, John, for a couple of seasons now?
I was just about to say that.
No, well, you might be encouraged to do it, but if you're not confident and you're not comfy with it, don't do it.
I agree with that totally, yeah.
You don't do just it. If you're
don't
not comfy,
pass it for the sake of passing. If it's not on, get it off the park.
At the same time, though, Derek, Pedro Caixinha then presumably is telling him not to do that. I mean, if it's a clear part of Rangers' strategy, then why should he lump it up the park?
So, you know, well, Brendan Rodgers said exactly the same two or three weeks ago. The goalkeeper should have just cleared that he didn't. He tried to be too clever. Celtic messing about the back and lost the goal. And he took the blame because he doesn't want the goalkeeper kicking it. But I think if I'm a goalkeeper and there's nothing on, why on earth would you want to play the ball to a fullback when somebody's a couple of yards away from him? Get it up the park and then argue somebody should be making space.
I mean, John, you'll obviously pay closer attention to Rangers in that sense than I do. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I mean, which goals do you think Wes Fotheringham cost in particular by doing this type of thing?
See, honest with you, many goals, I've not really seen as many goals, but see, it's a bomb scare waiting to happen, is what I said, Gordon. It's a bomb scare waiting to happen. It will cost us goals.
That's what I mean. Maybe you've been waiting for quite a while, John, so maybe it's not likely.
You don't watch it. Do you watch it every week? Do you fight to watch it every week? No.
Absolutely not. I've got the pleasure of being in here with these two on a Saturday afternoon.
Can I say one thing? On that night there, I can't even hope. My mate said my face was a picture when Penner scored the first goal because I just turned around, you know what I mean, and then he scores the second one. I can't complain.
So what are your thoughts on him then, John, about Penya?
Still jury's out, but he started the move. See the first goal? Sure. He got himself in the ball, in the box and scored. He got it two occasions. And Ellis, he was quite clever in getting the player sent off because he was strong, got in front of him. He can't knock a man at scoring goals.
Yeah, exactly. He's got to play. If he's scoring goals, then he's got to play. You're absolutely right.
But I'll tell you what, it was a strange decision what Pedro done, was bringing on the young boy in the middle of the park. And it actually, he got the third goal because the young boy looked quite comfy when he came on.
If you bring somebody on and he looks quite comfy and you win 3-0 away, how can it be a strange decision?
No, because he's meant to be a centre-half, a big boy, McCrory, but he was sitting in the middle of the park.
He could play anywhere, John. I said that when he first came in. I've seen him play right-back, left-back, centre-mid, wide-right. I've seen him play, but he's just
you
a utility player.
We've never seen that, Derek.
No, but he is. No, he can play there. I can play there. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, you're right, John. You're right.
It was a strange decision, but I got as a third goal and he looked quite comfy. And for a change, we took control of the game when we were down to 10 men and we took the game on. So the jury's still out, but listen, I'll get up there on a Friday night and win 3-0. Not many teams got there and do that to them, that's for sure.
Great stuff. Thanks to John in Paisley for his opinion on Rangers' performance on Friday night. Speaking about goalkeepers, Doris de Vries came in. First time we've seen him in a while for Celtic at the weekend. Put an impressive performance. And I just wonder if he's got any real hope of getting that number one jersey anytime soon, or if it's Craig Gordon's for the foreseeable future. We'll hear from Doris de Vries after the traffic and travel with Amber.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com, backing Scottish football all season long. Please gamble responsibly.
Hugh Keevans and Derek Johnson are alongside me, Gordon Duncan, and tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Lots of you getting in touch on Twitter as well, responding to some of the points. John Stralecki says Graham Dorans is hitting good form. Penya needs to offer more and get involved, do more in the game to go along with the goals. Ben Kavanagh says, though, is it not more being able to beat Celtic that Pedro will be judged on? And by the way, hello from sunny Costa del Sol. Had to get that in there. Well, we're struggling with Storm Ophelia, or whatever she's called. Ben's in the Costa del Sol. Well done.
I think Ben's made a good point, though, that as ever, and Martin O'Neill said this almost 20 years ago, Rangers are the yardstick for Celtic. Celtic are the yardstick for Rangers. So the day that Pedro Caixinha wins a match against Celtic is the day that his credibility soars. But Rangers are far and away better than they were last season. And they will, I think, finish above Aberdeen.
Okay, Doris de Vries says he knows he has to be patient at Celtic, but that he still has the desire to push on for that number one spot. The goalkeeper made his first competitive start for over a year in the 1-0 win against Dundee at the weekend. He was delighted to impress and hold on to that unbeaten run as well.
It's been over a year since my last competitive game. Yes, I was really looking forward to it. It's difficult at times as well when you have to wait, when you have to be patient. You never know when your opportunity comes along, whether it's injury or whatever. But you've got to stay on top of your game. So it can be frustrating at times. Especially coming in today as well. You want to keep that clean sheet, especially because you've been out for so long, not playing, finding rhythm, and hopefully put in a good performance. It's once you come in and you know the unbeaten run, you want to be on top of your game. So it's a pressure game. No matter how you cut it down, it's a big pressure. And you want to do the best as your ability, really. So luckily we had the support today of the supporters, you know, and to play in the stadium is amazing, especially with the crowd behind you. It can be frustrated at times because no matter where you go, you're happiest when you're playing. That's just the way it is. That's how I always felt. But to be here at such a special club, and Craigie's done really well last year as soon as he came back in, then you know you got to be patient. You know, you're going to want to stay involved and create something special here, which we shown last year, and we still want to create something special this year. And to be even have a be part, no matter how little it is, of that, is something special as well in your career. But last summer, there were opportunities for me to leave as well. I wasn't allowed to leave. That just shows the faith in the gaffer as well in me, how important it is to have somebody with my experience on the side. And trying to push.
I think it's fairly clear that Craig Gordon is Celtic's number one goalkeeper, but does anyone out there think that Doris de Vries could challenge that number one jersey, or maybe even that he deserves more of a chance? Let us know, give us a call, or get in touch on Twitter.
I think the good thing about him, Hugh, you know, he was never going to be in trouble on Saturday. You know, he was never going to have an awful lot to do, and we said at the time, it's all about concentration. If you're the Celtic goalkeeper at this moment in time, you're not going to see an awful lot of the ball, maybe a couple of cross balls at times or whatever, but there's not going to be all that many shots, so you've got to be alert to what's going on. And I'll tell you what, he had two or three really good saves when Dundee went for it in the last 10, 12 minutes of the game. He's had two really excellent saves,
which is why he got the Brendan Rodgers good housekeeping seal of approval, because he took him over to the Green Brigade and pointed to him as if to say, do you realise how much this guy has done for us today? So it's crucial for a club like Celtic, with Champions League commitments as well as their domestic treble to defend, that they have two good goalkeepers. On Saturday, he proved, although he'd been out of the team for a year, that he is a very good goalkeeper.
Any danger of Craig Gordon having to look over his shoulder?
Not immediately.
But I think every goalkeeper's got to do that. I mean, I was in a situation in the late 70s when it was Peter McCloy and Stuart Kennedy, you know, both international goalkeepers. You know, and if one of them had a bad game, he was out and the other one was in. So you had to be on your toes, and I think that's what's happening here. Craig Gordon realises, certainly after watching that game at the weekend, if I have a couple of bad games here, I could be out.
Mark's a Celtic fan in Aberdeen. Mark, what do you make of the goalkeeping situation? Because, like I said, it's no secret that Craig Gordon's the number one, but I know there are one or two Celtic fans that sometimes get in touch to say that they've got just a couple of question marks over that.
Probably Doris de Vries has got to be a good goalie because, well, just based on what Brendan Rodgers has done and who he brings in and stuff, he's got an eye, hasn't he? Wasn't impressed when he started, but what I think he has done, his biggest contribution is kind of what Derek's been saying there just now. He's made Craig Gordon step up to a better level. So he's pushing Craig Gordon. I kind of see him jumping ahead of him anytime soon, but it looks like if anything happened to Craig Gordon, he'd be able to jump into the breach and do a job.
As we say here in the west of Scotland, Mark, Craig Gordon's nose was put out of joint when Doris de Vries replaced him in goal. And then
Initially, you mean?
Yeah, not
the weekend.
No. And then Doris de Vries made his mistake against Kilmarnock and was not seen again for a calendar year. But as I say, it's essential for a club like Celtic to have two good goalkeepers, and I would imagine that Brendan Rodgers would be comfortable with either of them.
Mark, I know that some people will tell you that on Wednesday night in Munich, Celtic could be doing with both of them, but then there will be other people who will say, no, you know what, got a bit of confidence here, fancy the chances of at least making it difficult. Which camp do you fall into?
Well, I have to say that depends on your aspirations. Everybody wants to come second because there's no chance of coming first. But I would settle for third, and I think because of the score against Anderlecht, pressure's off.
The only pressure, Mark, is in terms of Celtic's credibility. You know, you don't want to lose heavily. They've already had five conceded against PSG at Celtic Park. Because of the return of Joep Heynckes, Bayern Munich are buzzing again, and the Allianz Arena, I think, will be a very demanding place for Celtic on Wednesday night. For me, it's all about damage limitation. I do not give, and the bookies don't give Celtic an earthly either.
You want to make a final point, Mark?
Hi, I actually did phone up initially about the Coutinho discussion that you were having. Mm-hmm. Just a very quick point. I think there's only one test for Rangers, and that's Celtic. So far, they haven't passed that test. I think the best thing that Coutinho could do until he does pass that test is probably pipe down.
Well, I mean, the man's entitled to have his opinion. I mean, sometimes his opinions are wacky. Sometimes they are factually incorrect. But he's entitled to have his opinion. You can't just say he should pipe down because he's Pedro Coutinho.
But I think he's making his own job harder. You know, he comes out with some quite incredible stuff. When I think, if you look at the way that Brendan Rodgers conducts himself, he doesn't come out and blow his trumpet. Just lets the performances speak for themselves.
But Mark, it's easier though, Mark. It's easier if you're winning games and you're the best team in Scotland. You don't have to do anything. Your players on the park do it all for you. So Brendan Rodgers just says the nice things after the game.
Yeah, but I still think that Pedro would be better just focusing on the job, keeping quiet, keeping out the media for the wrong kind of things. trying to focus Rangers into becoming proper challengers.
Yeah, but he's clearly having had the humiliation of losing to the fourth best team in Luxembourg. He is clearly doing his job. But if he chooses to say things that sometimes are daft, then that's still his call. You know, if the press ridicule him for that or supporters ridicule him for that, I'm sure it doesn't bother him. And you can't just say that manager should keep quiet.
The Internacional has been on Twitter and he says, can you ask Keevans,
can you
ask Keevans how he can disregard Aberdeen finishing second when they're unbeaten and ahead of Rangers?
Yeah, and they are doing a fantastic job right now. Again, Pedro Caixinha will be tested when he plays Aberdeen, as Celtic will at Pittodrie a week on Wednesday. I just happen to think that this Rangers side is good enough to sustain a run which will see them finish above Aberdeen. I may be wrong, but like Pedro Caixinha, I'm entitled to express my opinion.
You also expressed your opinion on Doris de Vries. Stephen in Coatbridge has got an opinion of his own on that subject, Stephen.
Yeah, how you doing, guys? Good evening.
Good, thanks.
Hi, Stephen.
I've seen the highlights of the game, obviously. I was working, but I'm just delighted for de Vries. He's been out of the team for a while, and he came in and he did an excellent job. I thought some of the saves were actually first-class saves. And I think, you know, he should be pushing Craig Gordon, because Craig Gordon, brilliant shortstopper that he is, he doesn't command that six-yard box enough for me. We've lost a lot of goals when the ball's dropped into that six-yard box, and Craig Gordon stood on his line. Instead of coming out and attacking the ball, putting the forwards off, he just stood there and we've conceded goals. And if De Vries, we've not seen enough of him to say he commands that six-yard box, but if he works on that and he gets a... I would like to see him get another shot in the team in the SPL games, you know. And I think, you know, you'll be pushing Craig Gordon for that jersey.
I think it's a bit harsh on Craig Gordon. I can think back to some fantastic saves from Gordon, you know, and yeah, maybe he's not always commanding, but I see absolutely no reason to put any pressure on Craig Gordon at this particular time. He has been magnificent for Celtic over the last year, and there are no grounds for leaving Craig Gordon out of the team at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I was critical of the first goal he lost for Scotland. I thought he should have come off his line. I think you've got a point there, Stephen. But listen, Celtic have only lost 5 league goals so far this season after, 9 games? And I think he's a wonderful shot stopper, and that's the most important thing for me, because there's not all that many teams get at Celtic. One or two might have a few chances, but the majority of them, Celtic can take care of that, and so can the goalkeeper.
Well, I agree with your point, Derek, but I'm just saying, I'm not criticising Craig. He's been a fantastic goalkeeper for his Craig, but I'm just saying he does have that sort of weakness.
Yeah.
His only weakness is that he tends to not come out.
Does not come off his line enough? Yeah.
He doesn't come off his line enough. And I think, you know, if Craig was more commanded, he would be world class if he came out and commanded that 6 yard box. But not saying that he's a great goalkeeper for us, don't get me wrong, but I'm just glad to see De Vries coming in.
Yeah.
He had a poor start, you know, he conceded a few daft goals and that, and he was right out of the team then. But that's down to Craig Gordon. He came in and done brilliant for us. But I'm just glad that the boy's in, and that'll do his confidence a little bit, good performance. And I'd like to see him get another shot at one of the SPL games, just to keep Craig a rest, you know. Everybody needs a rest, you know. We know now that hopefully we've got a guy there that can come in and keep this unbeaten run going for us. And that's really important, because we're going for 60 games unbeaten, not far off the record, which we already hold. Broad stuff, you know what I mean? Just keep it going. Keep this unbeaten record going.
What is
just on you go, Stephen.
No, that's...
What record are you talking about?
Well, there's a record, I think it's 63 or 64 games unbeaten, and it was set by Celtic.
Well...
And domestic football, I think it's something like 63 games.
That's why I say I think this is the hardest that 7 days of Brendan Rodgers' time as Celtic manager.
I mean, he has had a couple of these spells, hasn't he, where he's had to juggle, you know, a couple of different competitions and important games and so on. But I mean, do you put this one right at the top, or do you mean it's
Munich will be a long, long night for Celtic. Hibs on Saturday at Hampden will be a very interesting game, and then they have to go to Pittodrie midweek, And I think the record will come under severe pressure, both from Neil Lennon's team and Derek McInnes's.
Stephen wants to see Doris de Vries given more of a chance in the league games, Hugh. The only thing that history suggests that that's not likely, purely because Brendan Rodgers shuffles the team quite often, actually. You know, we've seen him make 8 and 9 and 10 changes before, but still tends to stick with Craig Gordon.
And he will continue to do so. Doris de Vries came in, had an excellent game on Saturday, saved Celtic from dropping points, and can be proud of his afternoon's work. But Craig Gordon will be back in goal in the Allianz Arena.
I think for the obvious reasons, Gordon, I mean, goalkeepers don't get tired. It's as simple as everybody else does. Everybody else is running 10, 11, 12 kilometres a game. The goalkeeper's in there. It's all about concentration for a goalkeeper.
Okay, the league table does not make for happy reading if you're a Partick Thistle fan, but Jags fans, you've been here before, haven't you? Does that not mean you're comfortable that you can come back once again? We're going to hear from Alan Archibald after the travel with Amber.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Download the app and score a tap-in. Please gamble responsibly.
Hugh Keevans and Derek Johnson are alongside me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Lots of people getting in touch on Twitter as well. Let's see, who have we got? Terry Monroe's sticking up for Wes Fotheringham about that earlier conversation. He says that he gets a lot of stick. I'm going to put the word stick in there because that's not what Terry says on Twitter, but that's the word I'm going to say for his distribution, because the passes back to him are not good. That's edited there for him to make it radio friendly. And Hugh, you tend to find that, see, once someone gets in touch trying to rub it in our faces that they're in slightly warmer climates, yes, than Clydebank, they all start to come out the woodwork. Anne Hayhoe is here as well, saying that she's in Fuerteventura with the McGees.
Oh,
Anne and the McGees. It sounds like some sort of band, doesn't it? I don't know if they're touring.
People.
Don't know if they're, maybe it is. Maybe they're touring Europe.
Is Bobby there? Okay, for her and Bobby McGee.
Partick Thistle, guys, we touched on it on Saturday. Now that the dust has settled and you look at the league table, Hugh, obviously doesn't make for good reading, but no, it is also only the middle of October and Partick Thistle have been here before. So just before we hear from Alan Archibald, give us your expert opinion on it.
It looks bad, I have to say. I went down to pick up my Sunday newspapers yesterday and there's a man behind me in the queue who had been at Firhill the day before and he was going off his head. He said they should call them Pathetic Thistle, not Partick Thistle. It looks bad because Chris Doolan and Chris Erskine were both in the starting 11 on Saturday. They're the two guys who can normally carry Partick Thistle through anything, but they're not scoring.
No. That's a problem. I'm just looking here. 18 goals have lost, so that's an average of 2 goals a game.
Yeah.
And they're only scored 8.
It does look like, Derek, a kind of crisis of confidence there as well. But David Beattie, the Partick Thistle chairman, is not the kind of man for knee-jerk reactions. It might be the case that Ross County get rid of Jim McIntyre, Kilmarnock get rid of Lee McCullough, brought in new managers. But Alan Archibald has done so much hard work for Partick Thistle, on top of the top six finish last season. And I think David Beattie would be very reluctant to make a change of manager.
Partick Thistle fans, are you pressing the panic button yet? Are you hovering over the panic button? How much are you concerned about what's going on at the moment? Give us a call, 0141 951 1025, or we are on Twitter at Clyde SSB. Alan Archibald's warning is Thistle players that turning the tide is only going to get harder as the weeks progress. The Jags do find themselves bottom of the table, 3 points behind Kilmarnock, who of course left Firhill with the 3 points on Saturday. And Alan Archibald says they must continue to try and be brave.
We knew how important the first goal was going to be, and it was a sore one to take. It came for a throw-in, was the biggest disappointment. We knew we were going to have a lot of the ball. We had an idea of how Kilmarnock was set up, and they did, and we just didn't move the ball quick enough. That was the biggest disappointment, to be honest. We took 2 and 3 touches at times, and we made it easy to play against. Kilmarnock must have enjoyed playing and defending that.
Was the reaction to the goals, did that disappoint you at all?
In terms of after it, or
in terms of after the end?
No, just the man on the goal. Once you're throwing, it's boys football stuff. It's a throwing down the side and across. Niall does make a mistake, he puts his hand up, that happens. But dealing with the first bit is more important. The second one's a kick out. But it allowed Kamal to go and play in the counter, which he'd done very well. Take nothing away from them. We were really poor.
Only 5 substitutes on the bench today. I mean, how much of the injuries have been?
Well, it's a big thing. I'm not going to use an excuse. The starting 11's a strong 11, without a shadow of a doubt. There's enough there to go and win the game. The injuries are a problem because they're all in kind of same areas with 3 or 4 full-backs and midfielders all out. But we've got to soldier on. There's enough, and that, as I said, enough quality in that starting lineup to win the game, today's game. Just got to go on, mate. We're not adrift as yet. The guys have got to take that on board, but they've got to stand up. It will only get harder to play against and deal with that pressure. They're playing at the home and you're at the bottom of the league, and the fans have rightly got on their back, but they need to keep on taking the ball at the right times. I thought at times we still wanted to go and take it, and we didn't move it quick enough, and then it affects your decision making. That's the big thing. That's when you find out about character.
Fans obviously showed their anger at full time. I mean, is that what you need to sort of appeal to them and sort of continue giving their back and their support to sort of get you out of the situation?
Nah, the fans have been brilliant. They deserve to boo. They've just lost 2-0 at home, so in a massive game. So no, they've got everything entitled to boo. They get a wee bit impatient, and rightly so. But look, football players are paid to take the ball under pressure at good times and right times. So no, nothing to say to the fans.
On Twitter, Alistair Wildman says the performance on Saturday was one of the worst since we've gone up. However, keep believing in Archie and the players. And a bit of support coming in for Alan Archibald as well. Jim McLaughlin, though, he says big fan of Archibald, but seeing what County and Killy have done, you wonder who he could get. And Russell replies to that saying, nah, stick with Archie.
He can only do what he's doing, you know, coaching the players and getting them on the park. The players have got to be brave. He's right. You see, once you start hiding on the park, then you've got big problems. You know, there's a habit of winning. You always see that with Celtic, a habit of winning every week. But it's the same when you're not winning. You get into a habit of losing as well. And it's getting out of that. And that's where players have to be brave.
And again, it's Dundee at Firhill on Saturday. It's vitally important that Partick show that they can turn a corner. And this is a decent side that Neil McCann has gathered. I mean, they gave Celtic enough problems on Saturday. So they will pose lots of problems for Partick Thistle, but you would then worry if Dundee were to win at Firhill, you would then worry that this crisis of confidence was deepening.
Brian's in Hurlford, wants to talk about Rangers. Evening, Brian.
How you doing, boys? You all right?
Yeah, good, you?
Hi, Brian.
Aye, no bad. I'm just listening to tail end. I was just from back from Dundee there, and I was just tail end of somebody's comments about talking about Rangers, this, and Pedro will be judged on the games against Celtic. I don't think Rangers and Pedro gets the credit in what they're due. They went to McDermott Park there and they beat St Johnstone quite convincingly with enough left in the locker. Some of their football, intricate football, was quite interesting, quite exciting to watch. Albeit I only watched it on my phone, but it was still a delight to get the victory. But I just feel everybody's on Pedro's back. But I think he'll come good and just give him a wee bit of credit when it's due.
I think we've been trying to give him credit all evening. It's the Rangers supporters who have come on and picked fault with the team. But the person who said that Celtic would be a yardstick for Rangers was correct, however. You know, you if you are the manager of Rangers, you cannot lose to Celtic every time you meet them, which Pedro has done. So that is an important one for him. Aberdeen, another important one for him, because he's got to fight off Aberdeen and try and finish second.
I mean, Aberdeen's more important. If you're being realistic, yes, when it's a Rangers-Celtic thing, of course you've always got to be up there challenging Celtic. But at this moment in time, that's not the case. They're so far behind Celtic. They're certainly not as far behind Aberdeen. So I think what the Rangers fans should be saying is, let's get above them, little bits at a time. Let's try and finish second. Let's have a go at Aberdeen, because Celtic are ahead of everybody just now.
Can I come back in there?
Absolutely.
See, we're not that far away to Celtic on regard to the league.
6 points at the moment.
Is it 6 points?
6 points.
No, the way everybody's saying we should have been further down than that, 6 points is still catchable by all manner of means, because they've still got Celtic to play three times, and they've still got Aberdeen and a lot of other teams to play, so I still think it's still up there for grabs.
Yeah. And I agree with you, and I said so on Saturday, that if Celtic had gone to McDermott Park 1-3-0, everyone would have said that's a tidy result. And it's the same for Rangers, it's a tidy result, but there are tests to come. Rangers against Hearts at Murrayfield with a huge crowd, that'll be a test. Aberdeen, huge test. And until such times as Pedro Caixinha does beat Celtic, that will always be the elephant in the room.
Well, I want to say a message to the fellow Bears out there. Keep believing, get right behind Pedro, because we're on our way up and we'll do fine. Just give him a wee chance.
There we are, good stuff. Right. Thanks to Brian. Thanks to Brian in Hurlford for that quote. And the thing is with this, is you can completely see both sides of it, because the Rangers fans who watched the game on Friday night and who went are quite right to be optimistic about it. And as Brian says, give Pedro Caixinha credit, but other people are also well entitled to say, well, Rangers finished third last season, they are still third, so let's wait until such times as they've improved on that before we dish out the credit, so to speak.
Yeah, but I think after the shock of what happened in Luxembourg had died away, Rangers then did start to improve. The improvement has been gradual, of course. There were setbacks like the defeat from Hibs at Ibrox, but they are looking a side growing in confidence and belief. And I think if they were to beat Motherwell at Hampden on Sunday and go into a cup final, that would be another important psychological step.
Beat the pundit with Goals in the Scottish Sun. The SPFL and EPL latest every Monday, Wednesday and Saturday.
It's 5-7. That means it's time to get involved if you want to play Beat the Pundit. Hugh Keevans is standing by, Derek Johnson is standing by, and they're waiting to take on you. So pick up the phone, dial 0141 951 1025, and you could be playing Beat the Pundit after the news.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Bet and play and pull a result out of the bag. Please gamble responsibly.
Hugh Keevans and Derek Johnson join me, Gordon Duncan, in the studio, and I'm delighted to say we've also been joined by Archie McPherson, fresh from his induction into the Scottish Football Hall of Fame. We'll get to that in just a moment or two, but we have a very important business to take care of first.
Beat the Pundit with Goals in the Scottish Sun. The SPFL and EPL latest every Monday, Wednesday and Saturday.
Yes, it is indeed Beat the Pundit time. Hugh Keevans and Derek Johnson are standing by. So let's meet our contestant, shall we? Andrew McNally from Rutherglen. How are you, Andrew?
Not too bad, yourself?
Yeah, not bad at all. I'm going to toss the coin, Andrew, but if you had the choice, who would you pick to take on, Hugh or DJ?
Definitely Hugh Keevans.
Definitely Hugh Keevans. A man who knows what he wants in life is Andrew. Okay, toss of the coin, heads, it's Hugh. Tails, it's DJ. Oh, it's tails. You're going to have to wait for your chance to battle Hugh. You're up against DJ. So let's give Derek some Clyde 2 in his ear. You got us? That's fine. You can just sit back and relax, DJ, while we give Andrew the questions. Andrew, I'm sure you know the way it works. You've got 30 seconds. Head to head, you can pass, and it's your chance to beat the pundit, okay?
Yep.
Let's go. Which Premier League team has been put up for sale today? English Premier
Newcastle.
League. Who do Leicester face in the Premier League tonight?
West Brom.
Who will Anthony Joshua box on October 28th?
Pass.
In tennis, who won the Shanghai Masters at the weekend?
Nadal.
Who scored a 90th minute winner for Inter in the Milan Derby at the weekend?
Pass.
Which Bundesliga team plays their home games at the Red Bull Arena?
Leipzig.
Who was voted Championship Player of the Month for September?
Bannon.
How many points would you get for 4 wins and 3 draws? Quick.
15.
Okay, thank God, just in the nick of time. From the born lover. You back with us? I'll take your singing as a yes on that
yes,
one.
I'm back.
Ready? Same set of questions to you.
Okay.
Let's go. Which Premier League team has been put up for sale today? English Premier
Newcastle.
League.
Newcastle.
Who do Leicester face in the Premier League tonight?
West Brom.
Who will Anthony Joshua box on October 28th? In tennis, who won the Shanghai Masters at the weekend?
Roger Federer.
Who scored the 90th minute winner for Inter in the Milan Derby at the weekend?
Pass.
Which Bundesliga team plays their home games at the Red Bull Arena?
Leipzig.
Who was voted Championship Player of the Month for September?
Lewis Morgan.
How many points would you get for 4 wins and 3 draws?
15.
Okay. Listening to that back, Andrew, do you fancy your chances?
Well,
Derek,
I'm not sure.
Derek sounded confident, didn't he? let's go through the answers then where we can. Which Premier League team has been put up for sale today? Newcastle, 1-1 to get off and running. Well done. Who do Leicester face tonight? West Brom, 2-2. You both bowed out on the boxing. Let's bring in a man who knows his boxing. Hugh Keevans, Anthony Joshua will face?
Pulev.
Okay, so none of you got that one. Still 2-2 at the moment. DJ, you took a 3-2 lead with this one. Roger Federer won the Shanghai Masters. Who scored a 90th minute winner for Inter in the Milan Derby? It was Icardi. You got that one, yeah?
No, I said passing that one, sorry.
So none of you got that one right. So still 3-2 to Derek. Which Bundesliga team plays at the Red Bull Arena? It's Leipzig. You both got that right. So Derek's still one up. And listen, Andrew, you're unlucky because Derek's got a wee soft spot for St Mirren and he's got an even bigger soft spot for Lewis Morgan. That's his favourite player in the world at the moment, I think. So he knew this one. Lewis Morgan, Championship Player of the Month. You were both spot on. 15 points for 4 wins and 3 draws, Andrew, but it was not enough. DJ with a 6-4 victory. Whoa. Thanks for taking part.
Not to worry.
Well done, Andrew.
Good man, thank you, Andrew. Now, I'm pleased to introduce a man who needs no introduction in front of the microphone, Archie McPherson. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Now,
it's windy outside, but I'm delighted to be
you
here.
You made it though, you made I it, did, and yeah. we're delighted that you did. So Archie, sure. last night, inducted into the Scottish mm-hmm. Football Hall of Fame alongside such names as Derek Johnson. I mean, the prestige. Yeah, yeah. But on a serious note, I mean, how much of an honour and a privilege is that to someone who is not directly involved in the sense of being a footballer or a manager, but to get that accolade?
Sure. Well, I suppose because I've been around for a long while in football in different ways. You go back to Derek, for example, what a coincidence. Who would have thought that when I watched him at Hampden scoring that goal in the League Cup final when he was the age of 16, that we'd both be together, not only in a studio, but both as as inductees into Scottish Football's Hall of Fame. It's a superb honour. I suppose some people say, well, is it only for footballers? It's not. Hugh McIlvany, the great writer, is also an inductee and so on. And I suppose anybody like ourselves, like you, Derek, and all the people who go to a mic and have done it for years, if they've helped in some kind of way promoting it, even by stimulating, even by controversy, even by people falling out with you over the air and so on, it's all about adding to the rich tapestry of football. And if you've I've been doing it now, on the 27th of October, I'll be 55 years, still earning a penny, and I still am, at this business. And I would never have thought that would have happened. I think I mentioned last night, Hugh, my first stint was to Douglas Park, Hamilton, and when I was trundling along the red Lanarkshire bus, Nikita Khrushchev was, that very Saturday, was sending missiles towards Cuba. And as I pointed out, the Kremlin must have got word that Hamilton needed a home win badly, so they withdrew their missiles and we got on with life. So I survived and the human race survived. I mean, it really was. I'll tell you what about that. Curious enough, years later, about 20 years later, I went to the States and we visited friends who were in Washington, some of whom worked at the Pentagon. And they actually, that day, they had sort of kissed their wives goodbye and said, well, you know, we might never see each other again. It was that serious. However, no gloom. Scottish football for me has given me a wonderful life and profession and entertainment. Exasperation, despair, anguish, you name it. We've all had it watching Scotland. And I hope it continues. I got the feeling very recently when, again, I've repeated this to people who may have heard it before, thinking about what I got. Hugh got part of it. I got all of it in the run from 1974 to 98. I did all 18 games and so on. Hugh was involved, I think, in the two World Cups.
Yeah.
And I did all six. And I thought, people don't realise what it was like. I mean, the excitement, Derek knows this only too well, when you're in the World Cup and playing the best. So my grandson phoned me from Stirling University Union, where he is at the moment, and he said, oh, it's great, Scotland have scored the night we were playing Slovenia. And I felt great for him. And then I never heard from him again.
It's funny that.
I thought to myself, how sorry I felt that they were built up there. He said, well, there's a mass in here watching the game. And then it's nothing. And there's something desperately both sad and wrong about this.
You know, last night, Archie, it's a wonderful excuse to wallow in nostalgia. Mm. You know, with John McGovern, a man who won two European Cups, didn't get a Scotland cap.
That surprised me, by the way. I would have lost that in a pub quiz.
Is it true, Hugh, that that's because the national setup didn't realise he was Scottish at the time? I'm sure I read that somewhere.
Ali McLeod was the manager, and according to John McGovern, Ali McLeod didn't know that he was Scottish, but Ali's no longer with us, so he can't defend himself. Mm-hmm. But you know, you'd John McGovern, two European Cups, no caps. The wonderful Alan McGraw, wonderful centre forward for Morton. When I came away last night, Archie, I thought, is that all we have now, nostalgia? Or are you still optimistic about what lies ahead?
No, I have to be very honest. No, I'm not optimistic. I don't think it would be wrong. I think it would be wrong for me to try and deceive people about what my feelings are about this. I looked at the last squad. As you know, I'm writing something at the moment. I looked at the last squad that Scotland had in France, and I looked at the ages. And, you know, when I started off in 74 and saw the ages of the first team in 74, they were all starting out in their careers. You know, Joe Jordan was only 21. Yeah. You know, Lou McCarrie wasn't old, and so on. You go right through them. Whereas if you watched, if you looked at the ages of the team that played, or the squad that was there in 98, they were called Dad's Army at one stage. And they were all on the last possible chance of playing in the World Cup. Yeah. Whereas back in 74 and in 78, you felt, we've got players that will be there in World Cups, maybe for another couple of World Cups. By the time we got to 98, no.
And Hugh, I think it's really nice of Archie that having you introduce him onto stage didn't even manage to ruin his night at all. That was excellent.
It was the best introduction I've ever had.
There's
no question at all about that.
High praise.
He couldn't have done better for Arthur Montford, I tell you.
Archie, I suppose when you're going through it all, like most of us, no matter what you do, you maybe don't get time to stop and take it all in. But now when you're inducted into the Hall of Fame, perhaps a time for reflection. I mean, high points, what sticks out? I'm sure there are so many. If you're asked to sort of pick one or two, what springs to mind?
Well, the three cups in Europe I saw, Lisbon, Barcelona and Gothenburg, all three, you know. And you felt at the time, in all three occasions, both in Lisbon, both in Barcelona and in Gothenburg, this will happen every now and again, you know. Mm. We might not get it next year, but the next year we'll have a club in a final. And we had that big gap until eventually Fergie came along and McLean came along to get into finals. So these were highlights, actually seeing clubs performing well. And of course, quite obviously, the Archie Gemmell goal in Mendoza is the one that always comes to mind. It was very interesting that the man who spoiled it for us was Johnny Rep.
A minute after we got the first game.
You know, we thought we were there, and then Johnny Rep hits his boy. But I discovered it was Alan Ruff had always said about that goal. Well, Alan would say it, wouldn't he? That it came down from a height, and it kind of surprised them, because when the ball was hit, it didn't look as if it would come down from a height. But Archie Gemmell apparently said, when he was on one of their programs, he said, "By the way, that ball hit my heel." And he said, "What?" He says, "It hit my heel." So I don't know whether Archie kept himself.
Which is understandable, actually. When you see the goal, you're right, because the ball went way up and it came down very quickly.
It came down quickly.
So it was spinning. So it hit me well.
Aye, and the thought passed through your mind, why didn't you say that before? Well, maybe it would have taken the gloss and the attention away from the great goal that Archie scored himself.
Now, if you've got any questions for Archie, do give us a call or in touch on Twitter at Clyde SSB. I'm sure he'll have much to say about the general talking points. Let's get to one of them. John is in Cope Bridge, wants to talk about that Celtic game at the weekend. Good evening, John.
Oh,
are we disturbing you, John?
Hello.
You're with
us.
Hi, hello.
Hi, how are Archie? How are you?
Thank you, John.
I know us Celtic fans always used to go on about Hugh Dallas, right? I know it's always a... Yeah, but I saw it on Saturday. Obviously, I think that's his son, am I right? Aye.
Andrew is, yeah.
Yes, I saw the performance. Every time Patrick Roberts hit the ball, he seemed to get pulled down. And how the big boy for the left back of Dundee stayed in the park beyond me. And I couldn't believe, actually, Neil McCann complaining about it after it. I know he made some bad decisions, excuse me, for him as well. But I thought, Lee Roberts got no protection whatsoever. And for your man to come out, Neil McCann to come out and complain about the head knock, I was just glad. I was actually, on Saturday I was at the game for a change, and the two of them, it was a right sore one. I was just glad that Gumbo and the knee boy got up all right, you know what I mean, the clash of heads, but he was trying to say it was a penalty. Excuse me.
Let me ask the guys about that specific incident, John, before we speak generally. Hugh, Neil McCann felt it was a penalty with the clash of heads.
Didn't think it was a penalty. I thought that Christian Gamboa was genuinely challenging for the ball. Unfortunate clash of heads. But when you see the direction that the ball takes when it comes from both heads, it goes in a forward going direction, which for me signified that Gamboa had made contact with the ball before he made contact.
I think when you've got both players with their eyes in the ball, there's not an awful lot you can do. I mean, you don't deliberately want to head somebody, because you're the one who can come off second best.
So I didn't think it was a penalty.
And you know, to go back to the bit about Andrew Dallas, you know, we're in a nostalgic frame of mind that we Jimmy Johnson used to take it week in, week out, as we Willie Henderson did at Rangers. They were lumped up and down all day long, week in, week out, and they just came back for more. Because it, when you play in that kind of way, and Patrick Roberts is that kind of player, you do get a fair amount of treatment.
It's respect you, yeah, because you're a good player. If he wasn't a good player, they wouldn't be tackling
at the same time, though, Hugh. At the same time, that was an era when it was, I'm not going to say it was allowed, but it was certainly part of the game. It's not anymore. So if it was as bad as John says it was, and by the way, the three of us were in here on Saturday afternoon, we didn't get to see the full performance from the referee. We can only pick up bits and pieces.
Yeah, but if it was that bad, Brendan Rodgers would have highlighted it. You know, Patrick Roberts plays in that kind of way. He invites that kind of thing. He's a wonderful player. He even had time for a little bit of showboating when he played Keep You Up.
Well, he's a lucky boy. Lucky boy. Yeah, because in our day, if you're
2 seconds,
that,
John,
you'd have been on the other side of the terrace.
On you go,
John.
I'm not saying there were anything no malicious in it. It was every time it seemed to be to get tackled. I mean, it seemed to get constantly pulling him down. There weren't any really bad tackles, malicious. It's just I thought he seemed to let the guy get away with everything. You know what I mean? And then to laugh, it was the big boy, the number three. I don't know the boy's name.
Kevin Holt, probably.
Left back. He was, when it was a penalty situation, when the two clashed ahead, he was right in amongst the referee, as if, that's a penalty. And I thought, you've got a cheek, mate. You know what I mean? But listen, could I make another 1 point before I go?
Yes.
I thought Rangers played well on Friday night, but I thought it all hinged on the sending off decision. And I watched a bit of it last night in highlights, and to me, Bruno Alves was instigating the first. See the man, the two of them were in the box. That was never a booting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's very unfortunate to be sent off, because Alves was the aggressor in the first incident, and in the second incident, Alfredo Morelos throws himself to the ground in a theatrical fashion. So it was very, very unfortunate to be sent off.
Thanks to John and Coatbridge for that call. Kenny, the Jambo from Airdrie's got a question for Archie McPherson. Hi, Kenny.
Hiya, guys. Three legends in yourself, Gordon.
Exactly. Trying to keep up, Kenny.
You mentioned the word nostalgia earlier, and I'm just wanting to take the opportunity by Archie's own. Well done for your achievements in football, Archie.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm going to go back and say, I tried to bring it up maybe a year ago on the show about the terrible trio for the old Jambo days. Can you give us a wee insight to your opinion of the Conbald and Worthoy Hearts?
Yeah, well, I tell you, as soon as you mention they were great players. Alfie Conn, remember, very, very good player indeed. Warthog, Jimmy Warthog. Who's the other one you mentioned to me?
Willie Bald.
Right. I'll tell you what my memory is of Willie Bald. In the schoolboys' enclosure, no less, watching Willie Bald playing against England in the game that Scotland had decided they had to win or not lose to go to Rio in the 1952 World Cup in Rio. And Willie Bald got a ball just outside the penalty area, moved in and hit the shot. It was 1-0 for England at the time. Hit the shot, hit the underside of the bar and came down. If he had scored, we would have gone to Rio. It was that. And that's what I remember about him in particular. Very strong player, very good player. And yeah, that tree was marvellous. So were the other famous five on the other side of the city, I have to say. So yeah, they were great players. And it was, I don't know how many caps he got for Scotland, in fact. And there were so many provincial players that I can think of right through the spectrum of Scottish football that didn't get capped for Scotland. We heard about one tonight, John McGovern. That surprised me that he'd never got a cap for Scotland itself. And what does that prove? It proved there were a hell of a lot of good players there, yeah, that could be picked for Scotland.
I don't know about you, Archie, but I cannot believe that someone, whether it was Ali McLeod or whoever, did not know he was Scottish. You can't be in two European finals without there being so much written about you, about where you come from. And we now know he comes from Montrose, John McGovern. So I don't believe that was the reason. What I do believe, there were so many good players then. It was awfully hard to get a cap.
Indeed it was. Thanks to Kenny the Jambo from Airdrie for that call. We'll get this lot a full time teaser, and we're going to hear from Newcombe Marnock boss Steve Clark. That's coming up next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com, backing Scottish football all season long. Please gamble responsibly.
Hugh Keevans and Derek Johnson are alongside me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Special guest as well tonight, Archie McPherson, fresh from his induction into the Scottish Football Hall of Fame. So feel free to direct your questions to Archie and, of course, Hugh and Derek. Not to say that we're fed up of those two, but sometimes a bit of fresh voice in the studio gives us some different questions.
And in fact,
and on Twitter, on that note, actually, the Celtic Room on Twitter says, can you ask Archie who has been the best Scottish player he has seen? Also, tell him his book, Undefeated on Jinky, was outstanding. So,
Well, Jinky, you can say for a start, was one of the great players. I'm asked this often. It's not as if I'm going to try and duck everything. But players come in different categories. Derry Johnson was a brilliant striker, also brilliant central defence and so on. That was one category. You go to midfield players. You go to a player that was mentioned very recently, Masipus, who played against, who was much admired by the Celtic players, etc. So if I had to boil it down, it would be the likes of Jinky as a forward-going player and Baxter, without any question at all. The greatest performance I saw Baxter taking place in was not the much-lauded showboating one at Wembley and so on. It was against Brazil in 1966, when they played a friendly before Brazil went on to play in England in the World Cup. It was one each. Stevie Chammer scored for Scotland. And we all went to see Pelle, who was playing that night. In fact, we saw Baxter, whom you knew well, watched and everything else, who could, when he wanted, dominate. Even with that languid, easy-ozy style that seemed as if he didn't really care much of the time, and he did it. Jinky, of course. The best goal I saw Jinky score was certainly at Ibrox on the mud, a muddy pitch. The last game they played against Rangers before they went to Lisbon, when he cut inside a ball with John Clark screaming for a pass on the other side. Instead, Jinky hit it with his left foot, the top of the net. Brilliant goal. The ball must have been like a cannonball as well. It was so heavy. So I don't come up with one player. I come up with several players that you can pick through the years. And if I boiled it down to two, it would be Baxter and Johnson.
There we are. I'm sure the Celtic Room will be happy with that answer. Let's give you guys this full-time teaser before we move on. Archie, this is we give these guys a question every night just to keep them thinking. We don't want them falling asleep on me in the next half an hour or so. So this one's been sent in by Tony Higgins. And remember, folks, if you want to send your question in, fulltime@clyde1.com. It won't take you long to figure out.
It's not the Tony Higgins, is it?
I don't think so, but it might be. It won't take you long to figure out why I've picked this particular theme of question either. Can the guys name the oldest newly appointed managers in the English Premier League and the name of the clubs that they were appointed to?
Say again?
So can the guys name the oldest newly appointed managers in the English Premier League?
Roy Hodgson, who's 70.
Exactly. So top of the list, Roy Hodgson, 70 at Crystal Palace. So we're looking for four more.
Is this I didn't hear. Is this for always or is this
English Premier League? So you're talking 92 onwards.
Right, okay.
I'll give you guys a bit of time to think about that one. Let's hear from Newcombe Marnock boss Steve Clark, shall we? He was in the stands, of course, at the Energy Check Stadium at Firhill as Kilmarnock ran out 2-0 winners at the weekend. He was on media duties for the first time today, and here's what Clark had to say as to why he decided Kilmarnock was the right move for him at this moment in time.
Many different factors. Obviously, an out-of-work football manager is the first one, so you're always looking for a job, you're looking for a way to come back in. I got an invitation in a sort of roundabout way to come up and speak to the board here at Kilmarnock. And really, all the credit has to go to the two guys sitting either side of me, because they sold the club, they sold their vision of the club. They were very honest, which In this day and age in football, sometimes is a trait that's missing. They were very honest. They didn't try to kid me on about how the club was and where they were trying to get to and how they were going to have to get there. And we spoke a lot about stability, something that maybe you don't get these days in football. So we spoke a lot about that, and really it ticked a lot of the boxes just at this particular stage in my career. Was just, I know it sounds a little bit cliche, but it was probably the right job at the right time.
Right job at the right time, says Stevie Clark. And Hugh, real honesty at the start there, saying, well, you know, why did you choose Kilmarnock, essentially, is the question. And he said, well, I'm an out of work football manager, I needed a job, essentially, which is...
Yeah, and he also revealed there that in conversation with Billy Bowie, who owns the club now, there was no attempt to kid him on, as Stevie Clark said there. I think it's a wonderful appointment. I think anyone who has the CV that Steve Clark has, having worked with the likes of Jose Mourinho and Kenny Dalglish, the contacts he must have down south are amazing. I would expect to see some very interesting developments when the next transfer window opens with regard to bringing in possibly younger players from down south. So they're not kidding him on. The only way Kilmarnock could go was up. They were joint bottom of the league when he took over. I just think that for Scottish football to have Steve Clark in our game, in our major division, there's no downside to it.
Well, Russell's in Kilmarnock. Russell, you a happy man?
Yeah, totally. You know, it was one totally out in the heart. You know, what I feel is totally ambitious, a very ambitious approach from Kilmarnock to make him, you know, our managers, because no offence to other guys, it was the typical managerial merry-go-round where you picked a duck out the merry-go-round and you chose him as a manager, whereas with Kilmarnock, both had an experience that hasn't worked. So I felt going with Clark, it's a sign. It's a definite sign that we want to get to back. We want back to where we were. And the club has become poisoned. Yeah.
It was interesting as well, Russell, because before the game, he's obviously given the players a pep talk, which is good.
I think they said that, didn't they?
He's not picked a team. All he's gone, he's sat them down and he's told them exactly what he's looking for. Then he left it to the two gentlemen to pick the team and do the tactics.
Yeah, I don't want to be too much in nostalgia, but I've got an affectionate memory of Stevie Clark scoring a very famous goal in front of 108,000 people. Can anybody guess where it was?
No, I thought you were going to say 108 for a minute there.
No, 108,000 people.
Are you about to say the Maracanã?
I'm about to say the Azteca in Mexico. Yeah. When Scotland were out there with Andy Roxburgh, was in charge of the under-18s, I think it was. Yeah. Maybe something like that. What a team. Paul McStay was playing. Yeah. David McPherson was playing. The Marbles team. And they beat the host nation, Mexico, in front of that crowd, 1-0. Stevie Clark has scored the goal that particular day. And I've kept my eye on him all through his career because of that.
But you know yourself, Archie, we can remember a time when Kilmarnock were a big club. You know, '67, when Celtic and Rangers played in European finals, Kilmarnock made it to the semi-final. Yeah. The FA Cup.
It was under Waddle. Was he there?
Under
the
Willie Waddle. Yeah. Well, I'm going back. Sorry, but you got me on in any case.
Absolutely. That's what you're here for.
I did the commentary when Kilmarnock won the league at Tynecastle. Remember? And what other game was on that day?
Hugh Keevans, this is definitely one for
you. What was on that day? The day.
Cup final.
Cup final. And the significance of that cup final?
Would be in. When did Willie Waddle win it? Is it 65?
That's when they won the league. But what happened that day was Jock Steen won his first trophy.
Yeah.
When they beat Dunfermline.
They fell in 3-2.
That happened that day. And I was at Tynecastle. I always remember, I mean, all Hearts needed was a draw. And Kamara won 2-0. And I remember Willie Waddle
sprinting on the pitch.
Well, you knew Deedle better than I did.
Absolutely.
But he sprinted on the pitch and grabbed Frank Beattie and hugged him up and down.
But this is the kind of thing that Stevie Clark has to do now, Gordon. You know, people can remember these magical moments in Kilmarnock's history, but it's a long time ago. And Stevie Clark has to re-energise not just the team, the entire club and the town.
Russell, just let me ask Russell, sorry, Derek, in your mind, does Stevie Clark have the appropriate group of players there at his disposal? Is it a case of getting the best out of them, or does he have some recruitment work to do in your mind?
See, to be honest, guys, Kilmarnock have been, you know, a team where we haven't had stability. You heard that there. What we really need is, unfortunately, I feel with the previous manager, no disrespect to him, it was an old pals act with certain players. And I think the problem with us with our first 8 games there was they were too close to the manager was too close to certain players. No matter how bad they played, they knew they were having a shot next week. You know, so this has all got to change. I feel we're still short in midfield. I feel Stevie Clark's going to bring in some youngsters, like what people have said.
Yeah.
He's got great top contacts there from Man United, Liverpool, Newcastle. He's got a big pot down there.
Yeah.
And you can look at youngsters. People are thinking, why are they getting youngsters from the Premier League? It's because they're better than anybody else that we've got now.
I think you're right. He's got to get the team sorted out first. But what he also has to do, and we're very... we're looking back on these Kilmarnock sides and when Willie Waddle was there and everything else. Where's the crowd going? They've got to try and get some of them back to support their home team. But the only way you're going to get them back is by playing entertaining football and winning matches.
Great stuff. Thanks to Russell in Kilmarnock for that call. Patrick in Dundee wants to talk about Stevie Clark as well, but Hugh Keevans is waving his pen at me. That always worries me.
Is Joe Venglos on your list?
No.
Oh.
So remember, we're looking for the... How many are we looking for? We're looking for the five... oldest newly appointed managers in the English Premier League. So for instance, Roy Hodgson, the guys have already got it. He got appointed at 70 years old.
Right. So Sam Allardyce, he's
no.
He's just
he's a youngster 60. Compared to these guys.
He's in his 60s, but he's not 65. No.
Are we going way back?
No, because it's the English Premier League era.
In 92.
So you'll be
right.
So these guys, and I'll give you a bit of a clue then, just to put it into perspective. These guys were all over 60, 65 or over when they got their job.
Yeah, that's a big help.
So for instance, Derek, you also said, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson, but not when he got the job.
When he got the job, he was already in there.
Exactly. So we'll get back to that one. Patrick is in Dundee. Good evening, Patrick.
Good evening. Don't mind me, guys. Just let those guys argue amongst themselves. I'm enjoying what they were talking about there.
Yeah, not at all.
No, that's okay. Just, guys, wanted to mention about Stevie Clark. Hugh, totally echo your sentiments on Stevie Clark. I think it's a fantastic thing to see him in the Scottish game, at least.
Yeah.
And I must be perfectly honest. I think this was a much more stark appointment than many people realise. Under Lee McCullough and even Lee Clark latterly, the Kilmarnock fans, things were just becoming worse and worse. From what people, a lot of Kilmarnock fans I know were telling me who were going to the games, things were just getting worse and worse. If Kilmarnock Football Club were to go down, maybe some people disagree with me, I don't think they would ever come back. I think they're in that much of a descendancy, a plight financially with the support they've got.
Yeah.
There is some decent players there, but I think it was a stark choice. Do we get another kind of Lee McCullough, a young coach, someone with ambition, who maybe just doesn't have the experience, or do you go for a tried and tested, not even a tried and tested, a well-schooled Ayrshire boy, not only an Ayrshire boy, Premier League level coach like Stevie Clark, and get them in? But I wonder, guys, just my kind of main point on this is this a trend that we may see with other clubs, what we've seen with Owen Coyle at Ross County? Could Partick Thistle perhaps go for a more experienced man should results slip under Alan Archibald? Quite interested to see what you guys think.
I'm guessing here, but Owen Coyle is at a club run by a man, Roy McGregor, who is very wealthy in his own right. Kilmarnock are owned by Billy Bowie, a businessman who's very wealthy in his own right. And I'm just wondering if that has been a factor in bringing Owen and Steve Clark back to the country of their birth. And would Partick Thistle, even if they have the inclination to get rid of Alan Archibald, which so far they have shown no inclination to dispose of the manager, would they be prepared to push the boat out that far? I'm not sure about that. All I'm happy about, Patrick, is that we have another top-class coach in our major division. Mm. It's all a matter of scale, but for me, this is Kilmarnock's Brendan Rodgers moment. They have thought outside the box. They have put money, because although Stevie says he's an unemployed football manager, he's not up here to be on income support. So they have put money into this, and they've got themselves a top-class coach.
You want to make a final point, Patrick?
Yeah, just I think that's spot on in terms of the Brendan Rodgers comparison, at least anyway. I think he's a class coach. He should do well. I think the main aim this season is absolutely to keep Kilmarnock up. I think that is absolutely the main aim for this season. Maybe if it gets to the end of the season, who knows after that. Can I just make a quick point, guys? Apparently there's been talk about Kubrat Pulev, who you mentioned earlier,
perhaps been injured against Anthony George. Yeah, so I want to know if DJ's ready to step in the last minute.
I think you might need a couple of training camps, Patrick. That's all I'm going to say.
He'll be fine. Great stuff.
Thanks very much to Patrick in Dundee.
Adios.
Thanks to Patrick. We're going to move towards getting the answers to this full-time teaser. And of course, we will touch on the big Lanarkshire derby from the weekend as well. All coming up after these.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Download the app and score a tap-in. Please gamble responsibly.
Into the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. As always on a Monday, Hugh Keevans and Derek Johnson join me, Gordon Duncan, but Archie McPherson has joined us as well, just to add some extra expertise. And by goodness, these two need it, because we're going through the full-time teaser answers at the moment. Sent in by Tony Higgins. We're looking for the five oldest newly appointed managers in English Premier League. So for instance, you gave me Roy Hodgson at the start. He was 70 when he got the Crystal Palace job just a few months back.
Shug, you've got one. What was that one you got?
Goose Hiddink.
Well done. He was 69 when he took over at Chelsea.
What about De Gavagat?
A bit of a Dutch theme here. Say that again.
De Gavagat.
I like that. Well done. Dick Advocaat, 67 when he took over at Sunderland in 2015. So that means we're looking for two more. And remember guys, we want you to send in your teasers, so send them in to fulltime@clyde1.com. Okay at the moment?
That's fine.
Couple more minutes. Yeah. Then it becomes clue time after that, doesn't it?
Yes.
Let's look back on the Lanarkshire derby at the weekend, shall we? We had a number of big games, didn't we, on Saturday. Yeah. We talked up the fixture card. We said it was a particularly impressive one. Well, Motherwell boss Stephen Robinson's putting all his focus now into the League Cup semi-final after they rounded off a good week with another Premiership win. It was 2-1 to Motherwell at Hamilton, and that was after the manager signed a new deal until 2020. Young midfielder Alan Campbell also agreed a new contract, and Robinson was delighted to leave what he says was a tricky ground with all 3 points.
Pick the time to scrap and battle and fight, and it's hard to take a touch on that pitch. You know, it's a hard pitch at level things, but we played the game the way we wanted to. We reduced it to scraps like we knew they would, but I thought we outscrapped them and outbattled them, and I think we thoroughly deserved the win in the end. A hard place to come to. So we're worried about the semi-final now. We can concentrate on that, so we've got a chance to get to the final, which is a great opportunity for us, and hopefully one we can take. Everything ahead of that, we'll just take each game as it comes.
It's fantastic to get someone like Alan Campbell tied down, by his performance. You can see what the fans' reaction to it is. The boy, he's one of their own as they keep singing to him, and it is brilliant for us to keep bringing those boys through, and his heart and desire, and deserves it. And I think he's an example to every young player at the football club that if you're doing well enough, I'll throw you in, and I'll keep you in, and you'll get a new contract. So it's been a decent week. Won't get too carried away. We'll just keep playing things down and keep doing what we do.
What's about Martin Canning then? We had one caller on the open line on Saturday who said Martin Canning should go because Hamilton Accies are a top six, could be a top six side. Hugh Keevans did not agree. Let's hear what Martin Canning said at full time.
We seem to be, they talk about teams finding a way to win, we seem to find a way to lose, which is disappointing. And it's individually, we're making individual mistakes. You look back at St Johnson, you look back at Hearts, you look back at Rangers, you look back again today. Individually, we're not doing our jobs well enough, and it's costing us. You can't have that. You can't have a team that puts in as much as we're putting in, and people make basic mistakes and basic errors at set pieces or within the game that cost you big time, and that's what's happened today. Yeah, and it's frustrating because there's not a lot in the game again, same as the St Johnson game, same as the Hearts game here, and we're quite a few bodies down, and we're still able to go and compete, and probably should beat teams of that calibre. So. For us, it's disappointing. It's disappointing, like I say, and we've just got to lick our wounds and get on with it.
Five straight defeats says it all. Mm. And that they also have serious injury problems. They also have turmoil off the park because of an alleged fraud scam. So these are desperate times for Hamilton Accies, and their owners will have to stay firm behind Martin Canning, or else they could decide to go down the Ross County Kilmarnock route and see if a change of manager would help. But it's very, very serious times for both Hamilton Accies and Partick Thistle.
Well, I think to take the lead as well, Archie. I mean, Skondras, what a goal it was. I mean, he won't hit a better shot again in his life. And then at the other end, you know, he tries to clear the ball and sets it up for young Rose to hammer the ball in for the equaliser. So it was a mixed day for him. But again, I think a lot of people felt sorry for Hamilton on Saturday, simply because, as you said, what's happened to them financially and the injuries and everything else. But I'm sorry, that's what football's all about, and they are really toiling now.
Well, as Hugh knows, I don't like the pitch. I said it often enough, and Hugh was sitting beside me. But nevertheless, there is something of a quality about Hamilton that persists. They're resilient for some reason. You can't put your finger on it, whether it's the support of the manager for the board in keeping him on despite the adversity, or the pitch itself, because they know everybody doesn't like coming to play there. But I did see Motherwell. I'll tell you what, I thought Motherwell were very unlucky to lose to Rangers in the first game of the season. I saw them against Partick Thistle. I thought they were excellent, well organised. You listen to the manager talking there. I know he talks like a rattle, but there's a degree of confidence about him as well. And I came away because I have to say, it's the first time I'd seen Thistle this season. They were awful. They were dreadful. And I said to the man sitting beside me, I said, you know, they play like that, they're going down. Mm-hmm. So they're in serious trouble. They're certainly inferior to what I saw of Hamilton. But Motherwell, very impressed with Motherwell. Yeah.
Robert is in Ridley. He also wants to go down memory lane with Archie. How are you, Robert?
Yeah, good evening, Gordon, Hugh, DJ and the legend, Archie McPherson.
Hi.
Yeah, actually, one of my fondest memories of being a Rangers fan for the best part of 50 years was the Phillips Stadium in Eindhoven in 1978.
Yes,
me too. Game that DJ played. In fact, DJ almost lost his head when Kenny Watson hit that shot.
Yeah.
I'm sure big DJ got in the way of it and put it in the top corner.
I don't know about getting in the way of it.
But actually, what it was, I always remember that. I was only about 11, 12 years of age at the time. I always remember pacing up and down the bedroom, listening to the radio, your commentary on the radio, and when Bobby Russell scored that wonderful goal.
Sure.
And am I right in saying, was Rangers not the first team to beat PSV Eindhoven at home in Europe on their own pitch?
I can't answer that right away.
It was something
I think
like 25 years or something, they were undefeated.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember the game only too well, because they hadn't played well at Ibrox. Xander, it was nothing each at Ibrox, said Derek, in the first game, as I recollect. Yeah. And they went down. They lost the first goal.
Well,
as I recollect.
John Gregg said to us, go out there, keep it tight for 20 minutes.
Aye.
If we do that, we'll overpower them and we'll get the win. And we lost the goal in 68 seconds.
But I do remember that, and it was a lovely goal. The last goal was a beautiful goal. Maybe the
Tommy
best
McLean.
Tommy McLean.
That's right. He did. He was at the back of that goal, and taken very well by Bobby Russell. So, yeah, I remember that game extremely well.
No, but actually, I would just like to thank you, because I'm actually getting goosebumps thinking about that night and thinking about your commentary when Tom McLean put that ball. Gally McDonald also scored, I'm sure, that night. But when Tommy McLean put that ball and Bobby Russell just bent it round the goalkeeper in the bottom corner, and your commentary that night was just sensational. And to this day, I've always remembered, it's been one of my fondest memories watching the Rangers. And I'd just like to thank you for all your services to Scottish football. Well, you've been an absolute credit to Scottish football.
Well, that's very kind of you. I have to say, to be perfectly honest with you, the appreciation of a commentary is very dependent on the result of the person
that's
talking to you.
So listen, you've got a BAFTA. You're the former rector of the University of Edinburgh. You're now in the Scottish Football Hall of Fame. Anything else to tick off?
A Super Scoreboard on a Monday night.
The pinnacle. A lot of personal things I'd better not mention. But
yeah, please don't.
No, it would be good to see, I know this sounds a wee bit like cliche, a good Scotland team again. But I think that's going to be very difficult for my grandson and his generation, for them to see good football played at that level. It's going to be very, very difficult. Having seen all of these World Cups that we played in modern times, I know just how important it is for people to get there, the enjoyment in it.
Yeah.
And part of the book I'm writing about it is, people don't understand, men from and women from a humdrum existence were finding themselves eating meat in Argentina off stalls in Cordoba. They were walking down the street, the back streets of the most quaint towns, both in Argentina, Mexico, for example.
Yeah.
That took them out of the environment. It did for clubs like Celtic and Rangers, of course, in the European tournaments. But I've been emphasising the global appeal of world football.
My son came over, he lived in London at that point, came over to Paris, no ticket. He just wanted to be in Paris the day that we played Brazil.
Yeah.
And then went home after the game. He just wanted to be in that city.
Well, I've spent a lot of time writing about that particular game, because the ticket frenzy was worse than I ever had. I was let down myself. Now, why was I bothering about trying to get tickets? I should have been focusing like a laser on this most important game, the opening game of World
Cup. You should be doing your homework. That's what you should
exactly,
be doing.
Exactly. What was I doing? Because I felt a ticket empowered you. Yeah. I think if you got a ticket for this game, you were really somebody special. So I went after tickets, and by the way, I failed you.
Great stuff.
Can I say something? Yep. Actually, there's two boys that are football men in Whole Foods. I go in there. I was in their shop this morning, believe it or not.
Whole Foods,
and they knew you were coming on the show. Too much. So they absolutely loved listening to you and everything else. All your cup finals and everything. So I got that mention for you, lads.
Other supermarkets are available,
of course.
Right, okay. Let's try and bring this full time teaser to a conclusion while we can. Sent in by Tony Higgins. We're looking for the five oldest newly appointed managers in the English Premier League. We've got Roy Hodgson at Palace, Gus Hiddink at Chelsea. Say it for me, Derek, the way you pronounced it.
Dick Advocaat.
I like it. Dick Advocaat to us.
The only other one I can think of, and it might not be Pellegrino, the Man City
It's a good shout, but it's not good
enough. He was in his 60s, wasn't he, when he took the Man City
clues,
job.
Clues now.
Both English.
Both English.
Yep, both English. One is sadly no longer with us.
Graham Taylor.
Nope. So like I say, one is sadly no longer with us. The club that he got this job at has been, the English Premier League club he got this particular job at, has been in the news today. It may or may not have come up on Beat the Pundit.
Oh, Newcastle? Who's a Newcastle man?
Oh, come on. He's a sir, for goodness sake.
Bobby Robson. Oh, for God's sake.
And finally, this one, he's only recently out of work, I think. He's also well known for hanging out of his Land Rover Range Rover window on transfer deadline day.
Harry Redknapp. We've got the five.
Great stuff. Well done. Thank you to Hugh Keevans and Derek Johnson for joining me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. A very special thank you to Archie McPherson, fresh from his induction into the Scottish Football Hall of Fame. I'm sure I speak on behalf of all the listeners when I say it was a complete privilege to listen to some of Archie's stories. Thanks to you all who got in touch on the phones and on Twitter. Thanks to everyone who listened at home. I'll be back tomorrow night with Fraser Wishart and Gordon DL, but in the meantime, it's good night from us.
Night night.